Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. This channel, Trauma and Social Change, it's absolutely the moment for that, isn't it? I'm Steve Hoskinson. I'm the founder of Organic Intelligence. I've been teaching in this area of trauma, embodiment, and social change for about 25 years. It's an honor, really, for us to be sponsoring this channel where we're going to hear a multiplicity of voice, all unique contributors to our collective understanding of how to move from trauma and support then social change. Our unique voice in organic intelligence has something to do with a koan that I'd like to present to you, which is trauma means unintegrated resource. And that's a koan, and if you'd like and are feeling intrigued about that riddle, then tune in to the post-trauma system development course that we are offering here. The coupon code that'll get you half off on that is ENJOY. Now, enjoy this next presentation, and we'll look forward to another meaningful time as we explore these topics, trauma and social change. Enjoy.
And now we will hear from Dr. Theresa Lau, and we are very thrilled to have you. Dr. Theresa Lau is a licensed chiropractor specializing in energy of alignment, somatics, and awakening. For 15 years in Berkeley, Dr. Theresa Lau has a Bachelor of Science in Physics and one in Women's Studies from MIT in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and she received her doctorate of chiropractic and life chiropractic college West in Hayward, California. Dr. Theresa Lau, I want to give it directly to you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate the introduction. Welcome, everyone. I think I'm going to get a couple participant faces here, so I'm not just talking to myself in a moment, but I want to welcome you and myself into this space. We are weaving time and space together. I know some people will be watching a recording. Some people are here at 6 in the morning. It's 8 o'clock at night here, and we are all around the world. So just wanting to arrive and thank you all for joining me, and let's dive in. Tonight, I will be talking about self-care, which is a topic that I've had some dissonance with for a very long time, and we're here talking in the trauma and social change channel, so I will be questioning just the different aspects of what self-care is, and then in particular, in this time of COVID-19 pandemic and social uprising here in the US and around the world. So we'll start with some discussion around the self and care, trauma and health, and then we'll move in at that point to, just changing my view. We'll move in at that point to discussing what the rules have been of self-care and now what the new ones I would like for us to discover and write together. So, and then throughout the conversation, I'll be stopping and giving us a chance to check in, connect with our bodies, do a couple of simple and short somatic exercises to bring the embodiment, not just into the talk and into this moment, but also going forward as you listen to this and recording and things like that. So without further ado, we'll get started. So start with the self. In the context of social distancing, the self is very large, where everyone is sheltered in place, either by themselves or with a very small group or bubble of people. And yet our personal individual health and the health of our close ones is very much dependent on the behavior of others, the behavior of our neighbors, our friends, the person at the grocery store. And that paradox in some ways is really highlighting our functional definition of what the individual is and what the self is. Our, at least here in the US, our conviction toward individualism and everyone doing everything for themselves. I have my own washing machine. I have my own vehicle. I have my own everything. And then everyone else around me has their own as well. Contributes to a very consumer-driven and separate life for us on the planet. And now that we're dealing with a global pandemic, we can really see and it's really highlighted the problem of trying to live for yourself when we are so clearly dependent on each other, dependent not just on the behavior of my neighbor walking down the street, who is going to wear a mask or not wear a mask when they walk out of their home, is going to cross the street or not cross the street when we approach each other on that level of behavior, but then also on a broader policy and international relations level, how we are going to move forward in this life together is being written now. It's being determined now. And the gift of this upheaval, both related to the pandemic and also related to the uprisings originating with the murder of George Floyd and then continuing on and reverberating around the world. I'll get into that juxtaposition in a little. But this is a moment for us to really reconsider what has been true and move forward into what we want, which is not a easy or straightforward process. It's a messy process. We have to learn ourselves and learn each other in a way that is more honest and more respectful of natural laws, of our capacities as human beings, of our dreams and desires as human beings, which is a far cry from the rules and the drives that are forming our world today. So specifically, I'm talking about capitalism and body supremacy and patriarchy. So these are big words. We all have heard them, we use them, but we're gonna tonight just see if we can't tap into the resonance of those systems and how they have made their way through not just our society, but also through our individual bodies. And we'll talk about the nervous system, we'll talk about trauma, and we'll also see what if we can expand or extrapolate that to from the individual body and our individual experience to the collective body. Okay, so that's a self. And then care. So care sounds like a nice word. Care seems like a good thing, and it seems like something that we should all have and should get for ourselves. And in fact, self-care, one of the first issues that I had with it when the term first started becoming very, very popular, is how much it, again, sort of moved the idea, which began with Audre Lorde when she was struggling with cancer and wrote her now famous quote of, you know, radical self-care, self-care being an act of liberation and an act of resistance. That has been co-opted, and now self-care has become such a, on one side, a commodification, like something that requires consuming. And then on the other side, something that has become so individuated and about making yourself feel better or maybe just feel less. And care has become sort of synonymous with the individual being able to rest. So me being able to rest. But again, with COVID and the pandemic, what we've actually seen is that we have, in order for people to receive care, there have to be care workers or essential workers, people who are putting their lives at risk, risking exposure to COVID-19 for the purpose of caring for us, for the rest of us. And so what is it to take care and then self-care and have allowed it to become so small, right? So concrete, so purchasable, and become something that we are sort of is another thing on the to-do list, another have to or should that occupies one spot amidst the overwhelm, the cacophony, the busyness of most people's lives today. What is it to take something as sacred as caring for another person, caring for ourselves, caring for each other, and push it into something that is so small and static? How did that happen? I guess is another question I have for us as a collective to ask. What is it that has created a space where we take an expansive and sacred act and philosophy and commodify it in this small and stilted way? part of the pandemic impact is to show us the disparity of how care workers, essential workers are treated, how dispensable in some ways their health and their lives are for the sake of others. And then at the same time, how broken the systems of healthcare are, especially here in the United States, where we still don't have universal healthcare and health services are a profit-driven endeavor. So like most businesses, the structure of how services are delivered and how money is received for services delivered, it's a profit loss, bottom line strategy. And like all things in capitalism, we're trying to reduce cost. And so our healthcare system here in the United States is structured such that we have as little available and ready as possible, so that doesn't cost as much to meet the demand. We're getting as close as possible. There's not a big margin for error. And so what ends up happening is our businesses, which are healthcare providers, are coming apart at the seams, even at the moment when they are needed the most. So healthcare workers are unable to receive PPE, protective personal equipment. Small business owners like myself are scrambling to figure out how to serve people when there is such a capitalist perspective on the whole thing. Again, how did we take this sacred act of caring for each other and bring it into the space that we're in now? COVID has just taken the illusions of healthcare and medicine as something that is an offering and made it very clear that it is a business transaction. So we're in this moment where there's a time for us to actually open and explore, what do we actually want? What do we actually believe in, and what do we really deserve? So I've laid a lot of very heavy things on us, and I just want to take this moment to give us a chance to stop and breathe. So I'm just going to have you, if wherever you are, sit up straight, put your feet on the ground, maybe shake your shoulders out, wiggle your toes, wiggle your nose, and take a breath in slowly in the count of four. So breathing in your nose, two, three, four, and then hold that breath for two, three, four, and exhale out the mouth, three, four, and hold it on the exhale, three, four. One more time in the nose, three, four, hold it, two, three, four, exhaling, three, four, and hold that, two, three, four. Great. So just wanting to give us a little bit of a break from all of that context of the space that we occupy now, and move on to checking in about what this moment actually is for us. So given how difficult the situation is, and given how much has been revealed with shelter in place orders and the impact economically on needing to respond this way to a pandemic, I'm wanting to draw a parallel between what's happening collectively and what happens with an individual. So here in my office, when I'm working with people, often they come to me when they're in a state of crisis, in a state of things becoming overwhelming, or whatever was working all of a sudden isn't working anymore. Very similar to this crisis. We were getting by, sort of. Some of us were getting by and some of us were suffering. And then now we've had this event where even the things that seemed like they were working are no longer working. And when an individual is coming to me in that state, the work that I do is really about looking for where is their energy available and where is there some ease that we can bring into the nervous system such that the nervous system can shift, can downshift from this crisis, a sympathetic fight or flight state, into a healing state, into a state where we can actually connect with the present moment, find whatever unbound available energy is present, and give the natural healing ability of the body a chance to actually engage. So rather than the whole system, your whole nervous system trying to save your life, your whole nervous system can actually stop and take stock, assess what has happened, assess what is happening, assess what are the needs, and bring a breath all the way through all of that. Not necessarily with immediate solutions, although sometimes there are in the body and in the spine, but at the very least to, like I said, downshift from that high crisis alert sympathetic state into one of connection and presence and readiness. And to my mind, this is what self-care actually is about and is for. Being able to connect with yourself in any given moment, whether you are activated or triggered, or whether you are trying to decide what to have for lunch. What is that process of connecting with your own wisdom, your own knowing from a place of ease, safety, and connection? So I'll have us just do one more exercise before we go into the collective body. And that is to put your hands one on top of the other, like this. And then just bring it right up here by the top of your chest. So not quite touching your neck, but just a bit under. And then letting your shoulders and elbows relax. And you can close your eyes or you can keep them open. And gently taking another breath in your nose. This time bringing the breath right under your hands, feeling your body move. And then exhaling out the mouth. Great. One more time. Breathing in and noticing the movement of your body, noticing the movement of your breath. One more time in the nose. And out the mouth. Great. So just giving us a couple, like I said, short somatic exercises to ground and to reconnect with that parasympathetic presence and connection part of your nervous system. So like I said, when I'm working with an individual, we're looking for where is there some ease and connection so that the person can have an opportunity to assess and ask a question that's relevant to healing and moving forward. In our collective body, what I've discovered since March and all of this has transpired is that if you'll imagine with me this vast global body moving into a crisis or a shock moment where everything that has worked is suddenly not working and there's pain and uncertainty and confusion, the process of having our response, our excited or stimulated crisis response, and the process of looking or finding, engaging some way to put our hands on our giant global collective body and breathe is very slow in linear time. It's like a large barge ship turning in the water. It's happening and there's a lot going on right at the place where the ship meets the water. There's a lot of force, there's a lot of tumult, there's a lot of uncertainty, but the ship itself is turning very slowly. And so this great arc of change that we've been going through for the last 7 or 8 months is in fact a crisis moment, a trauma moment. And it's, to my mind, a real opportunity for us to find a way to put our hands on our bodies and notice and breathe and find a connection and a place of ease. So why is that important? So I'm just gonna go into the nervous system for a short moment. A lot of sessions in the embodiment conference go into deep detail about the nervous system. It is what I have worked with for the last 15 years as a chiropractor and energetic chiropractor. The nervous system is magical. It is what runs all of the things that happen in our bodies, and it is our vehicle for consciousness and for communication and for expression. One of my dear friends has a teacher who was sharing that, our purpose as human beings, as human animals on the planet, is to experience and express what the vibration is in us so that we can tell the story of the world. So from my perspective, the nervous system is our best tool as human beings to tell that story, sing that song, to generate the vibration out here in the world that each of us uniquely has on the inside and why we come to the planet to live this material life. So the nervous system itself is mediated in terms of trauma, in terms of fight or flight and this place of rest and connection, is mediated by the way that we perceive what's happening in our environment. So the input or sensory information that's coming in from the environment or from our thoughts or from the way we're moving and running our energy, all of those things come into our nervous system and a decision is made about what that information means. And so our sympathetic nervous system is specialized to identify danger and to identify harm or potential harm. And the response is quick and decisive. It is designed to save our lives and must be respected as such. So sometimes I hear clients who have a little bit of internet searching education around the nervous system, and they, you know, hear me talk about what I do, and automatically they go into this creating a polarity of, we don't want to engage a sympathetic nervous system and we want to stay away from it. The problem is we need our sympathetic nervous system. It is not just a survival tool. It also is what gets activated when we have a challenge in front of us, when we are needing to change what's happening and make it into something new, when we hit a ceiling or need to raise our standard for what we've lived with before and what is needed in our world or in our life next. Our sympathetic nervous system is the thing that gets us focused in that way. And so it's not the enemy, but it must be understood and engaged with. Similarly, the parasympathetic nervous system, which has been taught for decades and decades as the foil to the sympathetic nervous system, where the sympathetic nervous system gets you into a fighting and flighting and fleeing state. The parasympathetic nervous system gets you into a resting and digesting state. However, the parasympathetic nervous system in the last several years has also come to be identified as part of our survival system. So when we go into a deep state of fear or terror, the parasympathetic nervous system actually helps us play dead, helps our whole body, the heart, the lungs, the blood flow to slow down. So rather than speed up, slow down so much that we are still frozen, still and frozen and not able to move. It's a survival technique. And so just like we need the sympathetic nervous system to focus on what's needed when we want to make a change, the parasympathetic nervous system helps us with rest and digestion, but also helps us with survival. And so when I'm working with people, what we're actually looking for is for our consciousness to become engage with and in a dynamic relationship with all the different parts of our nervous system. And so as far as what we are going to do tonight is, I want us to develop a little bit of a practice or have an experience of how to tune into the nervous system. And the sympathetic nervous system is on a hair trigger alert. We can tell it's undeniable. We'll put it that way. You start sweating, you can feel your heart beating fast, you are breathing more quickly and that sort of thing. The parasympathetic nervous system is a different, has a different style. And so we need to develop ways to engage with, participate and experience the parasympathetic nervous system. So next I will, have us go into what that might feel like. So I'm gonna walk you through this next exercise, which is, again, you can put your hands this way, or this time you can cross them or weave them together in this way. And you're gonna place your hands on the back of your head. So this is where your head and your neck come together. Oh, I have a spine right here. Here's my trusty spine. That's how you know I'm a chiropractor. So these are the bones of your neck right here. And then this is just a piece of the skull, of your skull that's sitting at the top of your spine. So I'm going to have you place your hands just under here. So kind of gently cupping the top couple vertebrae of your spine, and then your thumb and four fingers under the skull. It should be a familiar pose. It's like lying down at the beach or chilling on the sidewalk in the sun. So you're just cupping the back of your head with your hands. And you can do this lying down as well, or sitting back in your chair. And so all that's involved with this exercise is giving yourself a chance to notice what the sensation is under your hands. So similar to that breathing exercise that we just did with your hands on the front of your body, except this time with your hands placed here, this is actually where a lot of the new parts of the parasympathetic nervous system that have been written about in the last several years come out. So they are cranial nerves that come right out of your skull and the spaces between your skull and your spine. And by putting your hands right here, you're making direct contact with a bunch of them. And so just the presence and pressure and sensation of your hands there is activating the parasympathetic nervous system, which is lovely. But also what we want is for you to notice what that feels like. So again, not the sweaty brow and the heart pounding, but what is it to notice when the parasympathetic nervous system is being engaged? So if you just take a couple minutes, you can close your eyes or you can open them and just see what you feel. Is there a coolness? Is there pressure? You might notice tension in your arms or shoulders. That's all fine. Keep breathing normally. And if your eyes have been open, then try closing them and see if your awareness increases or if your awareness decreases. We're all wired differently. If your eyes have been closed, try opening them and notice what happens. Are you getting distracted by what you're seeing? Or are you able to tune in to what's happening, what you're noticing in a different way? Just giving yourself some time. And the thing with holding your cranial nerves and giving the parasympathetic nervous system some input in this way is that often you'll find that it takes just a little bit of time. It's kind of like you might have a friend who, when you ask them a question, they often have to pause and process before they can tell you what they think or what they're feeling. The parasympathetic nervous system is that friend. So just take a moment and notice. And how you know that your parasympathetic nervous system is really engaged often is there'll be a sigh. It might be a quiet one to yourself, or it might be a loud one into the room that you're in, but often there's at least one sigh. That's how we know we're in to the parasympathetic nervous system. Okay. And if you've gotten that sigh, or if you haven't, then another step in this exercise is to, whether your eyes are open or closed, start looking to the left and looking to the right. So don't move your head, but just using your eye muscles, look to the left gently, don't strain. Don't try and look as far as you can. Just move your eyes over to one side and move your eyes over to the other side and just noticing your peripheral vision. This is another way of engaging the parasympathetic nervous system. When your sympathetic is engaged, we get into tunnel vision. In a fight or flight situation, it's most important to focus on what's directly in front of you. But when you're in a parasympathetic mode, the peripheral vision can be engaged. So that's what we're doing. Just gently moving your eyes to one side and then back to the other and noticing maybe the sensation of the movement or tuning back into what you were aware of before you started the eye movement. And if there is another sigh that comes. And then the last one is a little bit funny. You don't have to do all of these pieces whenever you engage, just doing the lying back at the beach move is great. But if you like, you can also stick your tongue out and then move that left and right. Again, slowly, but the cranial nerve 9 innervates the tongue, and so we're engaging more of the parasympathetic nervous system with that part of the exercise. So just like the eye movement, giving yourself a chance to feel, notice the movement, and also what you're feeling inside. So what you're feeling inside is called interoception. So we have perception, where we're noticing what's happening around us. And then interoception is being able to notice what's happening inside of us. And in my practice, that is the superpower that we cultivate. Being able to notice what's inside of us is the key, the secret, the extra sauce option of being able to tune into and notice what's happening as it's happening. So doing these very simple exercises with the breath and bringing your hands behind your head and all of those things are ways of giving you a chance to practice noticing, and also to practice engaging the parasympathetic nervous system. So why do we do this? We do this because when we have a crisis, like when a person comes to my office as an individual, there's often something that's forced them to stop living their life the way that they've been living. And when they come into my office, what we want is for them to be able to start to develop and cultivate a practice of noticing what's happening on the inside, and then being able to engage the energy that's available. Because there's actually always energy available in your spine, in your nervous system. Even in a crisis, when it seems like everything has to go a certain way, or it seems like there are no choices, or there's only one choice, what we're really after with these practices that cultivate interoception is accessing, being able to notice that actually there's free energy available all the time. And so the idea with this work related to the collective body and this moment that we're in, this crisis moment that we're in, is that there is free energy available and present. And from my perspective, the uprisings and the movement towards social change is an opportunity and is galvanizing the free energy that's available in this moment. What we want, what I want as a practitioner, for individuals, and I want, what I want as a human on the planet is for us to be able to learn and cultivate a way of noticing where is the free energy that's available in the system. How do we pay attention to that? How do we move toward that even when it's not comfortable? So the parasympathetic nervous system is engaged with rest and digest, but it also is the place where we can bring more connection and presence into a situation that otherwise the sympathetic nervous system would take over as a crisis, right? As life-threatening. And so learning to cultivate our ability to tune in and notice as on an individual level is, to me, parallel and analogous to all of us being able to tune in and notice what's happening with our collective body, with our global collective body, just like we do as individuals. It's not like racism and police brutality and all of these things were not existent before people became politically conscious at this point and started taking to the streets. They have been there before, but just like we as individuals have a pain here, or every time I go down the stairs, my knee is clicking and hurts a little bit. We get so good at ignoring that. Right? We ignore it, we move on. And then at some point, something happens where we can't stop it anymore. We can't ignore it anymore. And often that happens in a sort of series of events, right? Like how movies and stories are written. All of these things happen seemingly coincidentally or by accident, and then it culminates into this sort of the perfect storm, right? Something happens where the crisis emerges, and our job at that point is to tend to what is available and what's free in that moment so that we can actually move with the momentum of the crisis or the fight or flight kind of reaction. So let's see. I think we have one more piece in here. Yep, I think that's it. And then I'm gonna move into the old rules and the new rules for self-care. So I see one question. I don't know, Magua, if you want to take that or if I should just read it. I see it's there, so. Hope you're on mute.
If you are ready to answer questions, we have a very interesting question.
Sure.
In what ways can we cue through our body language or tone or quality of voice someone else's parasympathetic nervous system?
Yes, that's a great question. That is the part of the parasympathetic nervous system that we were just connecting with this touch, is all the cranial nerves. And so the cranial nerves come and innervate the face as well. And that is a lot of this new polyvagal theory that people are speaking all about. It's not new, but it's being described as new as far as the parasympathetic nervous system goes. And all of the ways that we cue each other that things are okay, that social connection is the part of the polyvagal theory that is getting a lot of attention. It's a part of our nervous system that we can see with babies. They look to the caregiver to see how they need to respond to something. And the information is not given verbally, it's given with facial expression, with the smile, with the tone of the voice. And so as far as cueing each other's parasympathetic nervous system, I don't have to tell you how to do that. Looking at someone, engaging with someone, being in your own state of connection and care is actually what activates all these facial muscles and cues another person's nervous system to engage as well. Because when you see something, generally you try and reproduce it. If you ever watch a caregiver trying to feed a little kid, they'll like open their mouth. And so this is the way we interact as humans with each other. We mirror each other, we seek connection with each other, and the parasympathetic nervous system is a big part of that. similar to what I said before about parasympathetic being a rest and digest, but then it also has this way of sort of protecting us or moving us into survival of that, that play dead feature or function of the parasympathetic nervous system. This piece of the social connection where your cranial nerves and all of the nerve tracts of the polyvagal system, those pieces are also designed for survival as well. So we engage our parasympathetic nervous system by connecting with each other, but we can't overlook or forget that what we're learning in through social engagement is how to stay safe. So the parasympathetic nervous system is focused also on how to help us survive, right? So the social cues, we can engage each other's parasympathetic nervous system, and we should, and we do. And then also we need to understand that that is a form of conditioning. It's a way in which we learn what's okay and what's not okay. If someone's smiling at us, we're more likely to move toward them. but also we learn from our early years from whoever is around us or giving us care that we learn to associate what things are okay and what things are undesirable. And so part of that conditioning is also part of the parasympathetic nervous system. And so when we want change, again, we actually need to engage the sympathetic nervous system to transform the things that we've been conditioned with through the parasympathetic nervous system. So it is this dynamic, rather than trying to always stay in the parasympathetic, it is this dynamic. We need to learn to engage with the difference between what activates the two nervous, the new two parts of our nervous system, what our connection with each other and what self-care needs to look like is an opportunity for us to actually break through the things that we've been conditioned to understand as caring for ourselves. So, so just quickly to go through, as promised, the rules of self-care. I would say the old rules are to do it in your spare time. Do self-care is a private thing. You need to step away to do it. You need to go someplace and fix yourself and then come back. That's number two, is get back to being productive. So self-care in our pre-pandemic life has been unfortunately narrowed in definition to be a way to take care of the ways that we're not able to keep up and get back to keeping up. And that leads me to the third self-rule care from before, which is to keep it in the background and keep it from interfering with the rest of us, right? So, oh, I need to do better on my self-care is something that I hear all the time in my practice. And again, it's another item to feel guilty about. It's another thing to put pressure on ourselves about. And ultimately, it's a placeholder for the ways that I'm responsible for not being able to keep up with a world that is demanding too much from us as human beings. So I say we take this time when things that seemed impossible before are now suddenly possible to consider what are the new rules of self-care? What are the things that will help us actually bring care for ourselves and each other into our everyday life? What is the way to make self-care actually participate with the things that we're working on, the things that we're motivated by, the place that we spend the most time? How do we bring care for ourselves and each other into that new place? We make a rule. The first new rule of self-care is that we bring our care into the work that we do and into the places that we spend the most time, and don't keep it relegated to something that we have to kind of fix ourselves for somewhere else. The second new rule of self-care is to turn toward. So instead of using self-care as a way to quiet the ways that we are not able to continue pushing, instead of using self-care as a way, as a salve or an opportunity to kind of check out and stop feeling how difficult things are, the second new rule of self-care is to actually turn toward what's uncomfortable. And that isn't to say white knuckle it, grit your teeth, and push into something that is difficult. It is, again, to find where the free energy is in a difficult situation, whether it's an acute crisis or whether it's a chronic long-term thing that you've just had enough of. We want to find where is the free energy. And the only way we're going to find the free energy is if we actually turn toward, develop that ability to engage the parasympathetic nervous system and be able to actually turn toward and move with more connection towards the places that are crying out for change. The third new rule of self-care in these times is to love ourselves, care for ourselves as we would, as the other, meaning expand the idea of caring, expand the idea of taking care of ourselves to actually mean taking care of the world or what is needed next. So self-care is actually caring for our neighbor. So a lot of the, in my neighborhood anyway, there are these folks that have come out and offered to take groceries and help each other. Those types of movements are spontaneous, but they also speak to the natural vibration of care, which is an expansive one. So to limit self-care to just for or about myself, like I need to rest, it's more like, what is it that's going to allow all of us to rest? What is it that is going to allow all of us to have the energy that we need and to dream the dreams that we need to dream? So with that, I don't see any other questions. So there's one more question. Oops, Mago, you're muted. Oh, you're muted, dear.
We do have another question. Mm-hmm. And it says, is the parasympathetic connected to jaw tension? And is that addressable?
Yes, great. Yes, absolutely. I would say the sympathetic is probably more connected with jaw tension. Usually we're clenched when we are in a state of arousal, fight or flight, fear. And the parasympathetic nervous system is actually what engages the jaw muscles to be in an equilibrated state. So the contraction would be the sympathetic nervous system and being able to actually notice that you're clenching your jaw or notice the tension or the discomfort. That requires the parasympathetic nervous system. So thanks you all.
If you have any more questions for Dr. Theresa Lau, we still have a few minutes left and here's your chance. You could write them in the Q&A box right now. And meanwhile, I want to thank you so much for this really inspiring talk. And especially how you were bridging the individual and the collective body was just really interesting. And I see another question, so I'm gonna hold my question back. You may have said this in the first 15 minutes, and I could go back to that afterwards. What can you say about the Vibrant Body Wellness Lab and how does it work?
Yes, I was going to scoot that in at the very end. Like I said, I'm a solo practitioner. I've been taking care of people for 15 years. And with shelter in place and all that has happened, the community that I have built here with the practice has just changed significantly. We're here only one person at a time. There's space in between. And so for me, what I have come to understand through the last 7 or 8 months is that what it is needed from me is to be able to actually share more about these things that I have learned over being in practice these many years and teach and connect with people to hear how can we develop this interoception, engage with the parasympathetic nervous system. And so the lab, the Vibrant Body Wellness Lab, is a place for exactly that. So if you are someone who understands that the body is an important part of our collective liberation and that engaging in somatic healing practices for yourself, meaning learning how to tune into your own energy, engage your own nervous system. We all need each other. We all need practitioners and facilitators. But in this time where we have so much space and difficulty in connecting with each other, it's important that we have these skills for ourselves. And so the lab is a place where I want to host and lead and inspire people to develop their own experiments. What is it that works for you? And what is it that you can share with someone else that will help them find what works for them? Ultimately, the rules for self-care are your own. And ultimately, the way that you can find health and healing in the middle of a pandemic and not is to be able to develop your own somatic practice of connecting and tuning in and learning what it is that works for you in your body and in your life. So that's what we're doing at the lab. If you're interested, I'm just getting it started. It will be very experimental, and there will be lots of opportunities to play and learn. I have some people who are experienced practitioners and have done lots of years of energy and body work, and I'm just wanting to workshop with them. And then I also have people who are coming in who are brand new and just learning about somatics and wanted a place to not necessarily learn a technique or go to a training, but actually learn with other people who are engaging with somatic healing practices as part of what gets them excited and what helps them move forward and live their life. So that's what the lab is. Thank you so much for asking.
Thank you so much for your talk, for all your insights, and also for all the exercises and practical things that you shared with us. That was really amazing. And if you all got inspired and you want to find out more, in the chat, you find some links where you can get to know more about Dr. Theresa Lau. And of course, if you want to come back to this talk because there's something you didn't get at the beginning or at some point, you can within the next 48 hours. And if you need more time for that, you can buy a package, you can upgrade, and you can get lifetime access to this talk and actually to every other talk in the Embodiment Conference. There you have all the time to digest and to really dive into it in your own speed. And I also want to invite you to connect to each other in the coffee breaks. If you want to talk more about what you just heard, if you get inspired to dive into it yourself. And of course, the Facebook groups, there's the main group and the channel groups. You can keep up the conversation there. And before we finish the session, Dr. Theresa Lau, I want to give the last word to you. And I wonder if you have one top tip to become more embodied. If you could say, like, in one or two sentences, something that people could practically do to get more embodied.
Yeah. Any of the practices that we went through today will help you get more embodied. But in a broader sense, I think what would help people become more embodied is to just touch yourself, touch someone else. It is a truly profound and important vital part of being a human being. And so go hug someone, even if it's just yourself, and it will make a big difference.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.